This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
This is the Wimbledon Fan Show on Love Sport. Myself, Matt Beadle, here with George Jones from the 9 Years podcast. It's another draw, George. It's another draw.
Yeah, we're still waiting for that first win. I'm starting to wonder if we'll ever win again.
Well, hey, come on. Let's be positive, because Wickham haven't won at Wimbledon since 2008.
Yeah, no.
So that run continues.
Yeah, we got a really good record against Wickham. And when you look at it as them going into the game, they were third or fourth in the league. They were really tough a position. We all thought they would be. The quality wasn't there that we thought it might be. And they played like Wickham. Everyone listening will know what that means.
Oh, what does that mean, George? Are you throwing some shade?
It means they utilise the gamesmanship. I think that's the politest way I can say it.
Now, you've previously told me that you and Wickham fans have a very good relationship. Yeah. How's this going to go down? Come on.
They know every club in League One knows what Wickham are like, and their own fans know what they're like. It's not a shock to anyone that this is news.
Oh, okay. So a boring style of play, or a holding on to the ball at throw-in style of play? Is that what you're getting at?
Holding on to the ball and falling over.
Oh, okay. Oh, some League One shade early into the show from George Jones. If you are a Wickham fan, get in touch. 0208 7020 558. You can get us on WhatsApp on that number, or on the socials at Love Sport Radio. Were you at the game yesterday, George?
Yes,
I'm just kidding, mate. Of course you were at the game. And another man who was on the sidelines was Wally Downs. He kind of says the same stuff all the time, Wally Downs. Every time I listen to a post-match interview from Wally Downs, he always timestamps. So he'll say, oh, at 75 minutes. At that point, it was at 85 minutes. And he said we had to be resolute. He always uses the word resolute. He basically says what a manager, in a cliche sense, should say after the game. We don't really get anything more than that. And we know that inside the dressing room, he's given his players a lot more than that. But he's very much the company line when he speaks to the media, isn't he?
Yeah, and I think that's something that a couple of our fans are almost disappointed about, because Neil Ardley was very much in that way. He would say what you would expect him to say. There were never any shocks when he went to the media. And I think people thought Wally would be a bit more open and honest, because we are now a month into the season, 6 league games into the season, and the performances haven't been great. We've not been as good as we were hoping to be. The style of play isn't quite working for us. And I think people want Wally to come out and say something, rather than just the old, we were resolute, you know, it was a hard working draw, we got a good point. But I think people want to, you know, a bit more honest and Wally say what everyone else can see.
So what would you like him to say? What is it that you can see, George?
I think we can all see the way we're playing long balls, trying to get in behind, like we did towards the end of last season, that worked really well. But this year we don't have James Hansen, so we don't have that target man to play off. And that's really costing us so far this season, because we're playing long. There was a really good article came out this week from a Wimbledon fan who works for Opta, and it was titled The Long Ball to Nowhere. And that just sums up our season so far. We're playing long balls to players who can't hold the ball up, can't head the ball very well. And just tactically, we're all over the place this season, and the subs haven't made complete sense.
Is that a hark back to Wimbledon of old? Because obviously Wimbledon of old, everybody talked about long ball. Wally Downs is part of that old Wimbledon era in the, you know, the 80s and the early 90s, mid-90s even. Is it too much of a hark back to that long ball? Can you still play like that?
I think we can still play long ball. We did it really effectively towards the end of last season. But like I said, we had James Hansen playing. You know, we've done it before when we had Tom Elliott and Akinfenwa playing for us when we were in League Two under Neil. To play that way now, you need to have that efficient target man. We let Hansen go for budget reasons in the summer. We all understand that. And that was probably a correct decision, because we do need to save money this year. But to try and play long ball without a target man, it's not working for us at all.
I like how you first named the manager there, George. Neil.
Yeah, I think Neil's someone who everyone can relate to, and everyone calls him Neil.
Okay. Now, the boy, the beast, was back yesterday. Yeah. Not the first time, of course, that he's been back at AFC Wimbledon, I believe, right?
Yeah, no, not the first time. He came back last year, and again, he had a very quiet game this year, just like he did last year. Again, target man. Again, he went up against Will Nightingale for the whole game. And again, the whole game, Will pretty much kept him in his pocket. Akinfenwa's most sort of efficient passages of play for himself were when he was defending corners. He was in an element of his own, like he was when he was defending for us as well. But also we had Darius Charles come back for the first time since he left. It was great to see him playing, because for a long, long time, it looked like he would never play at any level again. So it's really good to see him come back. And he played quite well. But like I said, it was a disappointing performance from us overall. But and really, the fact that we're talking about the highlight of the game was seeing two ex-players come back.
Mm.
I think that really says all we need to know about Saturday.
Speaking of Bayo and the corners that you alluded to there, George, a tweet from Darren Curran who has said, "Why are we poor at attacking corners? We had four corners in the first half. All four landed on Akinfenwa's head, who didn't move from the six-yard line." Yeah. And he's put a little angry emoji, hashtag no threat. Yeah. Dan's an angry man.
I think that's disappointing. I think if you look at all of our league games this year, in all of them, we've had quite a lot of corners considering how many shots we've had, how many attempts on goal at all we've had. And the number of corners we have, we really haven't turned into anything, which is disappointing. When you consider how well in pre-season we started scoring goals from corners, which is something we hadn't done in previous years, but it gave us hope going into this season that we'd start scoring goals from set pieces again. But again, it's, you know, again, hitting the first man or Akinfenwa, when you're attacking a set pieces and Akinfenwa's defending in the box, that's 6 yards you can't hit it to. You can't hit it anywhere near him because he'll win it. And we were hitting it towards him every time. And it was just, like I said, I've put in my notes that I think we could have played for at least another hour and I don't think we would have scored. And that's really disappointing.
Well, I've got to say, George, the notes that you handed me prior to this show don't make for great reading, mate. I mean, listen, the timeline, half-time, 0-0. You've said kick-off, half-time, sub, yellow card, sub, yellow card, full-time. That's it.
Yeah, for us, that was pretty much it. We had 10 minutes at the start of the game where we had five or six corners in a row and sort of an opportunity to do something. And after that, like I said, I think we could have played for ages afterwards and still not scored. And Wickham, they did look like scoring. They had chances towards the end, a couple of good opportunities. But it was two really poor teams. It was very similar to the Accrington game, where I think Wickham's are very out of place where they are in the league. And I think towards the end of the season, it will be them, us, Accrington, fighting for probably that last relegation spot, assuming Southend don't pick up.
Wow, so that would be quite a catastrophic drop from Wickham, considering the start they've had.
Yeah, I think we're 6 games in. So you have to look at who they've played so far. It's not a huge fall. There's not a really big gap in the standard of the league this year. Because everyone's been, I hate saying this, but it's been a pull from all the teams we've played. We've played teams like Rotherham, teams like Sunderland, teams like Ipswich. None of them have been really outstandingly good teams like they were last year. I don't think there's any team that we've played this year who were as good as they were last year. And that's given us hope because it means that even though we're not as good as we were last year, we might still stay up.
And you've also played a couple of the top teams, in inverted commas, as well, you could say.
Yeah, I think that is something we all have to look at and sort of bear in mind. We have played Rotherham, we have played Sunderland, we have played Ipswich, who will probably be three of the top four come the end of the season. We have played Fleetwood, who will be aiming for a playoff space. We haven't had too many easy games yet, but we're still searching for that first win. And the longer that goes on for, the harder it will be to come by, because we've got a young team and the motivation will drop as they keep going, as we keep failing to win. So that's a huge game for us next week, regardless of who it is. And it's desperate for us to get that first win within the next couple of weeks.
I have no idea who you're playing next week, mate, but Joe Piggott is the striker that we know scores goals for AFC Wimbledon. He's hit, I mean, can you say it's only 6 games in, can you say it's a dry patch for him at the moment? Slightly off target again.
Well, he hasn't been playing much. He started again on Saturday, but before that he'd had 2 games on the bench where he hadn't come on or had only played very, very few minutes. And I think it's something that maybe now the transfer window shuts on Monday, maybe we'll start sort of reintroducing him to get more and more minutes. And he needs to start scoring because it's hard to see where the other goals will come from.
Mm. Again, just quickly going back to Bayo Akinfenwa, we won't make this show all about him, but Terrell Thomas spoke after the game about the fact that he enjoyed that physical battle with him. But Terrell Thomas nearly didn't make the game, did he?
Yeah, this is a story that emerged after the game in a couple of post-match interviews, where it turns out Terrell Thomas had cut his finger quite badly on a glass while he was washing up in the morning. And he actually needed stitches on that. And this is in a week where we found out Rod McDonald's out for 8 weeks with a PCL injury. And, you know, so had Terrell missed the game, we would have been in all sorts of trouble and we would have had to change the entire shape and everything. Because as it stands, our current sort of backup centre-back is Reuben Collins, who's only just graduated from the under-18s.
So what was the story with Rod in the end? Did he just get it strapped up? Did he have stitches? How did it work?
Terrell Thomas, who cut his finger on the glass, just needed quite a lot of stitches when he arrived to the ground and got stitches from Stuart Douglas, our trainer. But like I said, having Rod out for 8 weeks, that's going to hit us really tough when we're coming into these games, especially with, you know, Leasing.com or Checkatrade Trophies, whatever we're calling them.
Leasing.com, George, come on. Checkatrade was last season.
Yes. Whatever it is this year, it's just, it will be really tough because we're going into these games where you want to rotate the squad and we don't really have a huge number of centre-backs we can bring in for Rod McDonald, because we've got Archie Proctor, who would be our sort of our normal sixth choice centre-back. He's out for another month or so. So really, we're down to four centre-backs when we're playing three at the back.
I feel some sense of responsibility on Rod McDonald. It's the Love Sport curse.
Yeah, it is. That's why we haven't got a player guest this week.
Because he came on last week and was brilliant and is now injured and out for 8 weeks, you say?
Yeah.
So in terms of, like you said, centre-back options, are you a big player to lose, but are you comfortable? Do you feel comfortable without him in that side for a short period?
Well, 8 weeks is a long time in football, and I think with Will Nightingale and his injury record in the past, everyone's a bit nervous around that, considering he's only just come back. But we've got three good centre-backs. We've got Ruben, who can be on the bench and step in if needed for a game or two. But 8 weeks is a long time, so if one of the centre-backs gets sent off and misses three games or gets injured, then that's real pressure on us, and we have to change our shape, which at this stage of the season we don't want. But it could be a blessing in disguise, because last year we stumbled upon the 5-3-2 when injuries and suspensions forced that on us. So maybe this could force us into something that works for this season.
Now, we're still without a jingle for the next segment, so we are going to continue with... It is the 9 years podcast Man of the Match poll results. Give them to us, George.
Well, again, Nestor Guinness-Walker is the winner, this time with 51% of the vote. I think he's won it more times than he's not since we've started doing it again this season. Will Nightingale came second with 43%. Luke O'Neill third on 6%. So it just tells you how important Nestor and Will Nightingale on his return from injury were for us yesterday. But also the number of times this season where our three nominations have all been defenders or defensive midfielders. And that tells a story in itself.
Any other business from yesterday's game, George, that you'd like to bring up? Any other standout performers that took your eye?
Yeah, I think Adam Rosgrove came on, made his senior debut for us, and I think he was encouraging. I wasn't convinced by him in pre-season, but he looked much better on Saturday. He started, made a couple of good runs, looked a bit tricky. And I think now he's getting more and more full-time training under himself after he signed from the Cardiff Met University this summer. He could come good to us this year, but I think we still need to temper expectations for him and think realise he's not going to be this 15-goal player who's going to save us this year, because he scored 1-2 in the Welsh Premier League. So realistically, he's going to be a player who could score maybe 5 goals, 7 goals off the bench this year. But it's encouraging to see him come on and finally make his league debut.
Indeed, it is. The AFC Wimbledon Fan Show on Love Sport. Plenty coming up.
For the fans, by the fans. Love Sport Radio.
Go on, Sir Pilchard. Love that. Love that from our producer, Dave, has chucked in a bit of Cliff Richard. How do you like that, George?
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that one, to be honest.
No, I'm terrified about what feedback we're going to get on Twitter for that, David. Crikey. Cliff Richard on the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show. We've reached new heights. Of course, the young ones is a reference to the Academy and Development Squad update that George is going to give us now, because the under-18 won their Youth Alliance Cup match against Portsmouth on Tuesday. 5-1, a resounding victory.
Yeah, it's really good. The boys have already sort of started the season well. They've only had one defeat so far, which for us is a huge positive sign, because historically the under-18s normally start the season pretty badly. But this year, under their new manager, Rob Tovey, he's come in, they've done really well. They've, like I said, beaten Portsmouth 5-1 for us in the Cup match is a huge success. Zach Robinson got two. He was on fire towards the end of last season, started the season great as well. I'd be surprised if we don't see him on the bench for the first team before the end of the season. I know he's still very young, he's coming through, but the rate he's scoring, he can't be far away from at least getting some time on the bench. Also, Dylan Ajay-Hirsi, who some of us saw in pre-season for the first team, he's come in, done really well again for the under-18s, first year in with the under-18s for him. Jack Madlin and Troy Chiabi also scored against Portsmouth. And again, just seeing the young players come in and beating Portsmouth, that's a big thing for our academy, because we normally start poorly, so the Youth Alliance Cup, something we haven't got a great record in historically. So for the 18s to keep playing, to start the season well, considering they're so young, even for their age group, is so important for us. Because we are a team now that we're cutting the budget, so the young players are going to have to come in and break into the first team. And it's so, so important for them to sort of start well and break in at 18, because we've seen with Paul Kalambayi, Will Nightingale, Anthony Hartigan, who have already sort of broken into the first team. How well they're doing. You've got like Jack Rudoni, who's on the fringes and will get minutes this year. It's great to see.
It is great to see. And ultimately, that's what every real football fan, I suppose, wants to see at a football club. We all dream of having a team of our own homegrown players, our own local lads making up that starting 11. Of course, in modern football, it's nigh impossible to make that happen. But if we can get a select few into that AFC Wimbledon squad, it makes a huge difference, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it's so important. I mean, like I said, we've got Zach Robinson and Dylan Ajay-Hirsey who have done really well, and I predict quite big things for them coming forward at the club. And, you know, last year we had Toby Sibbick, Paul Kalambay, Will Nightingale, Anthony Hartigan as regulars. So that's four of our sort of 10 outfielders having come through our academy. And considering our academy's only been a professional academy for less than 10 years, that's a huge achievement for us. And I think we keep building on that. And it's not impossible for us to see us maybe having a team of 7 or 8 homegrown players in the future. And that for us, not just sort of, if you ignore the sentimental side about we all want a team that's come through our academy and understands the Wimbledon story and understands the Wimbledon way. It's great to see because, if anything, they're just cheaper than getting players down from Premier League academies. And they're hungrier because they've come through, they know our story, they want to do well. Because our under-18s yesterday, they played MK and we won 5-0. And for that, it's huge for them. I've spoken to the 18s manager. He said it meant so much to the boys. And for them to keep doing that and to try and keep this momentum going, it will be great because there is places in the first team available towards the end of this year for some of them. And it's great to see them pushing for that.
I don't think I've ever seen you speak more passionately about the club than you. I'm not actually joking right now. Like, you seem to be... This is something that is quite important to you. When you speak about AFC Wimbledon and you speak about the games, you have a tone, a certain line, a certain reaction to the games. But this is something that means a lot to you.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I've worked with the academy in the past. I know quite a lot of the players who are in the 18s this year. And it's great to see them pushing on and getting results. Especially like yesterday against MK or against Portsmouth. Teams who have historically got, you know, quite high profile academies, had players who have gone in. Like Portsmouth have had players like Jack Watmore who's come in and influenced the first team. So for our boys to be coming in and beating them convincingly, and I think we had 4 under-16s playing yesterday as well. So for them to come in and start winning games like that, and just seeing some of the players who have sort of been on the bench or been involved with the under-18s, the way they're breaking in and to see some of them on the bench for the first team this pre-season was so encouraging because it shows there is a pathway there for them. And for us, that's the best thing for this club because it means we are beating clubs like Chelsea to young players. Like Nestor Guinness-Walker, we signed him from the Met for the first team this season. He turned down Chelsea because he was a young player and he knew he had a pathway with us. And that's so important and so encouraging because as a club, we do want young players and aggressive players, energetic players who want to do well and prove themselves. And under Neil Ardley, we weren't a club able to do that because we were going out having players like Trotter and Soares. You know, journeyman players who, you know, they did a job, but they weren't great to watch. Hmm. Whereas now we're getting in young players, energetic players, hungry players who want to do well. And yeah, the standard of them may not be as great as the Trotter or Soares, but at least it looks like they're trying. And as a fans, that's all we can ask for.
I think the key word you've used there, George, is hungry. Is that players have that hunger because players can come down from the Premier League. They can come down from the Championship. And like you say, the quality is guaranteed to an extent that they're going to be better than what you've got. In fact, it won't be guaranteed, but it's likely that they're going to be better than what you've got. But there is always the knowledge in the back of their mind that they will go back to their parent club because that's who they belong to. That's where they dream of playing. So the hunger for them to perform for AFC Wimbledon, yes, it maintains their match fitness. Yes, it gives them a bit of experience. But depending on the individual, 9 times out of 10, that individual is going to go, well, I'm going back to my parent club. So if I have a bad game, it doesn't really matter. Hunger now in the game is such a key thing. It always has been, of course, but we're seeing now younger players wise up to football a little bit more than they used to. It used to be about just being at the top club, maybe getting a wage, not really playing. But players are now starting to go, do you know what? I'm going to step down to League One. I'm going to step down to League Two because I know that I'm going to get a game. I know I'm going to get a full season. Otherwise, what else am I here for? And you mentioned there the players that know the AFC Wimbledon story. They've come through the ranks. They've worked with the staff. It makes such a difference because they have that hunger. And if that hunger is then to leave AFC Wimbledon, to go on to a bigger and better club, which do exist, it's a good thing.
Yeah, and I mean, like, we've had loads of players who have come through our academy and have sold before some fans have even become aware of their name. You know, we've had Jay Bursick, Will Mannion, Harrison Fulks, who have come through our academy as goalies. You know, and they're now at Stoke, at Hull, you know, and doing really well. Joe Bursic has just been called up for the England under-20s. Will Mannion's been involved in the England youth setup as well. You know, like Jack Medlin, who's played for the under-18s this year, he's been playing for Wales schoolboys in the past. We've got a young boy who's playing for England schoolboys at the moment. You know, and it's great to see we've got young players coming in and developing. And even if they do go on to bigger and so-called better things, you know, and earn great money, which is what we all want for them at the end of the day. It'll be so, so great to have those players come through our pathway because it will help us get the best young players in the future. And maybe young players will start turning down Chelsea and joining clubs where there is a pathway. Because like you said, you've got young players are wising up now. The number of young English players who are going to Germany and going to Spain or Portugal. Because that's the pathway now of joining either a lower league side or a club abroad and then developing it and then maybe coming back for the big money towards the end of their career. And that's the pathway now, and it's great to see young players wising up to that.
In terms of young players from years gone by, are there any that stick out for you over the course of AFC Wimbledon's history?
Yeah, I mean, you've got some players who have sort of... It's tough for us because we've risen up the league so, so quickly. It's tough to evaluate, you know, where the young players are. I mean, we had a young player, Louis Theonopoulos, who came through when we were in the Ryman, who's been... I think he scored 20 goals a year every year in the Conference South or Ryman since he left us. We've got Ryan Jackson, who's playing at Colchester at the moment. We've got a couple of young players on the books at Premier League and Championship clubs trying to break their way through there. And then you've got Will Nightingale, who's our current captain. Toby Sibbick went to Barnsley for quite big money this summer from our academy as well. And we've got so many big young players who have done well and developed themselves. And like I said, I think they could be better still to come through.
Mm-hmm. And the development squad, not such a great result against Watford on Thursday. They lost 3-1.
Yeah, it's the development squad. It's very little information has come out about this. So
what's the crack here? When you talk about very little information, is it just one of those things that almost exists in name, but fans don't really know too much about it?
Yeah, some development games we open up to the public and others where we've got like loads of trialists or some of the under-18s are involved and we're not sure how it's going to go, we don't open up. So I'd imagine Watford, considering they've got an international break coming up, they probably played quite a strong team in that. We're not sure how strong or what our team was. All we know is our team was very young. That's all we know from it. And Paul Osu scored our goal, so another one who's come through our academy and broken through and will be getting first team minutes this year. And it's encouraging. I mean, if the first team played Watford in a cup match or something and lost 3-1, that wouldn't be the worst result.
No, absolutely not. And a bit of admin, a great start to life at home, which the AFC Wimbledon Twitter feed has said to describe a victory over Cambridge United today.
Yeah, the ladies got a good start. It's their first home game under their new manager. They came back from their game last weekend being abandoned in the cup, which has been rearranged for this Wednesday. But, you know, for the ladies coming back, they've got a tough year this year. Their budget's been quite horribly. But for them to get a 2-0 win against Cambridge, it's a good start for them.
It is a very good start to them. Now, tomorrow brings the transfer deadline for teams in League 1 and League 2. We're going to be talking a bit about that next.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
It's the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show on Love Sport with me, Matt Biddle, and George Jones of the 9 Years podcast. If you want to join the debate and throw a question to Mr. Jones, it's 0208 7020 558. You can WhatsApp us on that number as well. He's dying to hear what you've got to say. And you can get in touch with us on the socials as well, at Love Sport Radio. Now, George, I don't think a football fan show or a football show full stop has gone by this week without the mention of Bury and Bolton. Sad news obviously coming out with the fact that Bury have been thrown out of the Football League. Bolton have survived, but a 5-0 defeat yesterday again suggests they've got a long, 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 long way to go. Your thoughts on this?
Yeah, starting with Bolton, you know, like you said, they lost 5-0 again on Saturday. That's 3 in a row they've lost 5-0. They've had a game postponed in that time as well, so it could have probably been 4 games they'd lost by 5 or more in a row. And for them, the transfer window shuts on Monday. So even if they survive as a club financially, realistically, they're in League 2 this next season. And financially, again, that'll be a big hit. And it's going to be tough for them next year. But really, I think everyone's thoughts are with Bury. Because what they've been through over the last sort of couple, over this summer really, has been atrocious. And as a club, we know we've been there, where you just wake up one day and your club's gone. And we were very, it's the wrong word, but I'm going to say lucky what happened with us in the sense of the time of year it happened. Because there was just about a month between the club going and AFC Wimbledon starting and playing our first game. Bury have now got 10 months. And that'll be a long time, because if the fans decide they need to reform and go again from the Northern Premier League or the North West Counties League or wherever they're going to go for, it's going to be tough for them to rebuild from that. This time period is going to be a long season for Bury fans. And I just hope the football community can get behind them. The club have released a couple of statements basically saying we're going to offer every piece of support we possibly can over for Bury once they reform, if they reform, to try and help get them off the ground. Because every fan wants to see Bury, AFC Bury or whatever they're going to be, back in the Football League soon.
Well, like you say, I mean, if there is a beacon of light to be shone after this, it is in the form of AFC Wimbledon, right? Because there is no better example of a club, of a football club, coming back from the brink and actually being successful. Now in League One, the story is incredible. Bury can surely take the wise words, the wisdom from AFC Wimbledon to think we can get back to where we are.
Yeah, I think for Bury it's going to be tough. The position they're in right now is tough, like I said, and their fan base, it doesn't seem completely united at the moment. They're still trying to save the old club, Bury FC, and try and get them back into League Two. But I think realistically, the best thing for them in the long term, even though it means so much more heartbreak in the short term, is for letting that club fold and rebuild and try and get a new club going at either Gig Lane or somewhere else, and trying to, with the aim of going back to Gig Lane at some point.
Did you have memories of Gig Lane, George?
Yes, we've been there so many times over the last 7 or 8 years. It's tough. We had a couple of good memories there and a couple of less good ones. But for Bury, there's a club, you know, like we beat them by 4 goals or more twice in 1 week. As a club, because we've gone from League Two into League One about the same time as them, we've had them in loads of cups as well. So for us as a club at Bury, they're always like one of our constants. And we're all, you know, it seems every cold November midweek game, it seems like it's always going to be Bury away. Mm. So as a fan base, we've got unique memories with Bury, and it's going to be really tough seeing them. Like, we've got them towards the end of this season, we've got them, well, it was meant to be in mid-October, the home game against them, or the away game, sorry. So for them, having 3 Saturdays for us will be weird, knowing the circumstances will be horrible. Because for Bury not to exist, and it's the first time in my lifetime a club's been chucked out of the EFL. And it's embarrassing, really, for every club in the league that this has been allowed to escalate and the rules have been allowing this to happen. Because you've got Bury who have gone. Bolton were very close to going. They were less than 24 hours from folding. Oldham, there's some stories coming out of there over the last couple of days where things are not looking great for them either now. And this is a domino effect where we could lose another 3 or 4 clubs over the next year or two.
Mm.
And steps need to be taken to make sure we go on about this. I know Jeff Stelling talked about it on Soccer Saturday and talked about maybe a salary cap or regionalising Leagues 1 and 2 or something to try and bring costs under control. But really, just we need to have a proper fit and proper persons test from the EFL. Because what they do now clearly hasn't worked. You shouldn't be able to buy a football club for £1.
No, you absolutely shouldn't. And you mentioned Jeff Stelling there, and it's fine. And I get that you can make a rallying cry when you're live on TV, but ultimately, action needs to be done. And to go back to Bury fans, I guess it's a big question now as to what you do as a football fan, because ultimately, you are a football fan. So when your club goes out of existence, do you stop watching football in general? I imagine you don't. Do you stop following, dare I say it, another club? Is that something that Bury fans might be thinking about? You know, in the sense that you follow Bury, that's all you care about. But if this doesn't work out in that interim period, because you want to watch football, you want to go and soak up an atmosphere, do you almost, I'm not saying you, obviously you don't support another club, but do you start going to different stadiums to just take in that atmosphere?
Yeah, but for Bury fans, I think realistically what they're more likely to do is there will be a supporters team, or there will be a Bury side that will play, even if it's just friendlies every Saturday.
Even immediately, you think?
I think their supporters team has been playing games already this season, from when Bury were still just getting games postponed or suspended or whatever the EFL were calling it. So for them, I think they'll probably keep doing that, and they'll just keep watching them, keep supporting them, and keep making sure that they carry over a fight for when they reform next summer. Whether their MP gets what he wants and they come back into League 2, or whether the better option, in my opinion, and they reform in the lower divisions and have a couple of years working back their way towards the conference. Because you look at Bury, you look at their average gate, and they were not a Football League side in terms of what their income was. And so for them, I think if they reform and they come back as fan-owned and sustainable in the conference, that'll be brilliant for them.
And how do you feel, George, about the EFL after this? Because there were calls, of course, when the news was given and Bury came out and said, look, we had a reputable offer, I think it was around £7 million or so, that would have helped the club survive. And we presented that to the EFL. And yes, the EFL had already extended various deadlines for them. But Bury said that the communication between them and the EFL has been nothing short of dismal, is what they said in their statement. So in terms of a football fan, a follower of a club in League One, how do you feel about that?
Well, that's tough. I mean, we look at the Bolton situation and the way they've lost so many games so heavily this year. They shouldn't have been allowed to start the season. So I think the EFL dealt with Bury correctly there. But you look at this £7 million thing and you look at this Brazilian priest from behind it, that doesn't look entirely convincing for me. And personally, I think they just had so many deadlines that they'd missed or not hit. And personally, I think that the EFL took the only decision that was open to them. But it's a disgrace that it was allowed to go on this long.
Now, you used the word lucky when you described AFC Wimbledon's situation. Mark Hendricks has tweeted in and said, I've got to say Bury are luckier than us. They have longer to reform and rebuild. But the Bolton issue winds me up because of the better goal difference that opposition teams will have against us come the end of the season.
I agree with Mark totally about the Bolton situation. Because you look at Tranmere, who, you know, before yesterday, they were on 3 points and a negative goal difference. And their only points had come from a 5-0 win against Bolton. And, you know, by the time we play Bolton in December and April, which is our games against them, that if they have a better team, that's unfair. Because you're in a league which went down to goal difference last season. To have a team winning a game 5-0 and having that team be completely rebuilt 3 months later, it's unfair on every team in the league. Going to what he said about Bury, yeah, they're a bit luckier because they do have time to organise. However, that also means they have time for the momentum to sort of fade. And because realistically, if you look at this come April or May, most Premier League football fans or Championship football fans, they won't remember Bury. They won't be in the forefront of their minds anymore. They don't have the momentum and the public support. That because it was a whirlwind when we did it, we still had so much public support, so much anger because of what happened. I just worry about what the sort of attitude towards Bury will be in sort of 6, 7, 8 months' time.
Just on that Bolton issue, this is something that needs to be addressed, I think, immediately, because we can't get to the end of the season and it be, you know, on goal difference that teams could potentially go down and then the issue is raised. Because you can see that happening,
yeah.
Right? You can see that happening like it happened between Sheffield United and West Ham. Of course, not a goal difference issue, but an issue behind the scenes that was raised after the season because Sheffield United went down, yeah, in 2007, West Ham stayed up. And also, is this not just a more extreme version of teams before or after transfer windows, you know what I mean, or dips in form? Could you possibly present that as an argument?
Yeah, but it's one thing, you know, saying, oh, they spent a lot of money in January and signed a couple of players, or they spent a lot of money towards the end of the transfer window. This is a club who, for one of their games, had an average age of 19. So I really think it is unfair, and I don't think you can compare it to anything, because it is uncharted. And you look at them and the fact they've got potentially more points deductions coming, because they still haven't been punished for the game they postponed towards the end of last season or the game they postponed this season. So they could potentially have another 6, maybe even 10 points coming off there. And it's so important when you're looking at teams like, I know Nick Draper talked about it on the podcast this week, talking about having teams and what the final points tally needed to stay up this year will be. Going down in points per game, it'll probably be 47, 48 points because of the games against Bury that have been lost. But to have Bolton and still not know what points they're going to be. Because at the moment, they're still listed as minus 11. It could end up being listed as minus 11, or it could be something like minus 21 they end up on by the time that all their deductions are added on. And it's so important to get this situation sorted as quickly as possible, mainly just so other clubs know what they have to do.
One of the arguments that people constantly bring up, and actually it was on the Fans Forum show earlier on between Dave Chidgey and Andy Jones, and Andy Jones made the point of saying, surely relegation threatened clubs, and we can't use that word yet because we're a few games into the season, so I don't agree that you can say that club's doomed for relegation or that club is going to be in the drop zone, because we don't know. Like you said earlier, you can't tell with regards to what Wickham are going to do because it's only a few games into the season. But can we potentially say that it's only a race for two spots now? Well, we know that it is. It's only a race for two spots. So essentially what's happened has made it easier for clubs. I don't like that argument, because I don't think that you can put that forward. I think that's dumbing down exactly what's happened to Bolton and Bury. But realistically, that is quite true, isn't it?
Yeah, I think realistically, most people have written Bolton off, especially if they get like another 10 points for their failure to fulfil games. And I think Saturday for them, unless they do something quite serious over the next 24 hours or so and make a lot of signings before Monday's deadline, they're in a lot of trouble. And I think you are looking at two places effectively. And I think you look at Southend, they're still to win a game. You look at us, you look at Accrington, you know, it'll still be a relegation battle in League One. But I think the main thing to focus on, relegation this year, at the moment, our focus isn't on that. It's on our thoughts with Bolton and Bury and trying to make sure this doesn't happen to Oldham or whoever's going to be after them. To make sure that clubs are financially stable and the people owning them have the club's long-term interests, you know, at the forefront of their minds.
Just on those Saturdays that you were due to play Bury, is there anything that's being organised for you to do as a fan base on those dates?
It's still very early on. I mean, Bury only went on Wednesday, so I'm sure there will be something, whether it's the under-18s or a development squad game being on that Saturday with some proceeds going to a Bury Supporters Trust or something. I'm sure there'll be something organised. For fans of most clubs will be trying to organise something and give some money towards Bury.
You know what you're going to miss most about Gig Lane, don't you, mate?
No, what's that?
Meat and potato pies.
Oh, yeah.
Some of the best in the league, my friend. Absolutely wonderful. The ones that just slightly dip down in the centre, little hole, bit of gravy, lovely stuff. Now, we did say we were going to talk about transfers. We're going to get onto that for sure, 100% next.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
It's the AFC Wimbledon fan show on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, here with George Jones of the 9 Years podcast. And we're going to get onto transfers finally, George. Of course, the deadline is tomorrow. Rob McDonald out for 8 weeks, like we mentioned earlier. Is anyone going to come in to replace him? Is anybody going to be leaving the club? Is anybody going to be coming in elsewhere on the pitch?
Well, this week it was announced that Ayub Asal has gone out on loan. This is something the club are focusing on this year, trying to build on and getting young players out on loan to get a minute. And that's something I think there'll be probably one or two more going out on loan. But the deadline for that isn't Monday because they're going out to non-league clubs, so they have a bit longer to do that. I think in terms of incomings, I think the rumour on social media at the moment is that we're going to have Marcus Force coming in from Brentford.
Wouldn't be a bad sign in that.
No, as a fan base, he's played against us a couple of times in friendly. We know he's Finnish youth international. He's done really well. Brentford rate him very highly. We're not really sure what style of player he is, even though he did score against us in pre-season. But I think we all know we need a striker, so he can come in and hopefully he comes in, or some striker comes in, and he can do really well. But you look at it, and I do think we need incomings, but the budget is the problem.
So in terms of the budget, what realistically do you think Wally Downes has got in the coffers to spend, if anything?
I think Wally's gone on record saying the budget is pretty much spent already. So I think unless we've been able to find a bit of extra money, or because we've had this EFL distribution from the money that Bury were going to get. So it's a question of now looking at that and saying, does the home game money that we've lost by not playing Bury, how does that relate to this extra money we got from the EFL from not playing them? So it could be that's added an extra couple of grand into the budget, hopefully. And if it has, then maybe there's enough to get a loan fee in for someone like a Force, for a club who just want him getting playing senior football. Because Brentford's system is a weird one. They don't have an under-23 team. They have what they call a B team. Mm-hmm. And so maybe they do like getting players out on loan. So it could be that could be a very low-cost deal. But realistically, I think we need someone out to get someone in.
And between the sticks, Nathan Trott has been called up for the England under-21 side. So do you think that potentially you need to be aware of that?
Yeah, I think it's something. I mean, when Nathan Trott got injured just before the start of the season, we brought Joe McDonnell, who was our backup for most of last season, back on a sort of what was termed a short-term contract. And he's been a sort of our second choice or our third choice behind Nick Zanov as well. But I think with Nathan from Trott getting this call up, which not all of us expected, because in League One, youth international call ups are not so common, especially if they're not going to be playing. Because you look at them and the national managers or national youth team managers, tend to say, okay, they'll be playing a men's senior game, so it would be better for their development to play that rather than a friendly or a European qualifier for the under-21s. And you look at Nathan Trott, Aaron Ramsdale is in the same squad. So realistically...
Yes, there it is. We should have a dinger. We need to get that in. We need to get that in, David. We need a dinger for every time Aaron Ramsdale gets mentioned in the AFC Wimbledon podcast. Not one has gone by yet this season without Aaron Ramsdale getting mentioned in the AFC Wimbledon podcast. There it is, Aaron Ramsdale. Sorry, George. Go again.
But like I said, because that our goalie from last season is also in the England youth squad, I can't imagine Nathan Trott playing for the England under-21s. So I'm surprised they've said we'd rather have him travelling and not playing with England than playing in a League One game for us. Especially because, you know, it's a tough game and, you know, I'm a bit surprised about that. But I do think it means that Joe McDonagh will probably stay for the whole season. Because you look at him, and if Nathan Trott is going to be a regular in the England under-21 setup, like he was sort of in previous years or previous England age groups, you look at that, that means we're going to lose him in October, November and March as well. Plus, what other training camps they have during the winter. So I get a feeling that that will mean for us probably keeping Joe McDonagh on for a full season. But it is something we need to look at in terms of future recruitment, especially for goalkeepers. Because that is now at least probably four games, at least maybe five, six, maybe even seven, depending on midweek games and cup replays and stuff during international breaks, of us not having our first choice keeper. He's already missed four games this year, so he could be missing seven or eight games, maybe even 10. And for a goalie, you don't want that. You can't have your goalie missing 10 games a season.
No, absolutely, you cannot. Now, we've got a bit of anger on this show today, George. Of course, Dan Curran has already tweeted in with an angry face with regards to those corners that Adebayo Akinfenwa kept defending. Now we've got Liam the Womble, who said, "Let's get rid of Appiah!" Exclamation mark. Another game where he can't be bothered. He's so lazy.
Yeah, Appiah, I think that's harsh. Last season, I would have potentially agreed that he didn't look fully involved. But this year, he's played well. He's improved. He hasn't been great, but he's been better than he has been. And you look at, you know, whether you believe that's just because he's in the last year of a very lucrative contract, or whether you believe that he's actually, you know, this is him and he's fully fit now. Because Appiah does have a role to play, but he is our top earner. So if someone comes in for him, I'd take whatever they offer, even if it's nothing, just to free up that wage bill, because we could get him potentially two players to replace him on the money he's on.
So you agree with that? You agree it's time to get rid?
I think it depends on what comes in and when it comes in. Because if it comes in after we'd be able to get anything in, and I'd say no. But if it came in tonight or very early tomorrow and we can get in, you know, whether it's Force or, you know, two other players who can come in to replace him and improve our squad depth and maybe add a bit of creativity, I wouldn't be against that.
Okay. Well, on such a note, Dave A at Ratty75 has also tweeted in, "Do you think this is just a rough start and they have the players there to do better? I dream of days of mid-table boredom." Do you? Do you, Ratty? You want excitement in your season, surely?
No, I think we all want mid-table boredom.
Really? Would you be happy with that?
Yeah, I think we'd all kill for that. But I think we agree we're lacking something at the club at the moment. You've got Anthony Wordsworth, who, from what I'm hearing, could be out for another month. But when he comes back, that's huge for us. He's our creative outlet in midfield. Him coming back will be huge for us. But we've got Joe Piggott. We've got so-called sort of players up front who should be scoring. It's just the creativity in midfield that we're lacking. Because you've got Callum Riley and Scott Wagstaff, who were both similar types of busy players, but they're not necessarily creative midfielders. And you've got Anthony Hartigan, who'll dictate tempo, he'll control the game. But again, he's not going to get you 15 assists a season or 10 assists a season. So I think we're really missing Wordsworth, and he can't come back soon enough.
Okay, now looking ahead to the games next week, the midweek game, the leasing.com trophy against Brighton under 23s. I'm presuming you'll be at that one, George?
Yeah. It's one of those games where the club haven't even announced on the website in sort of a fixture release way that this game is happening on Tuesday.
Why?
Because that's club policy for this trophy, is that we don't publicise it at all.
Okay.
Because it's just because of the Don's Trust and the way, that's just the way they've decided to do it for this, because of the B team boycott and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But for this game, it's an opportunity for us to blood some young players. We've got to play four players who have played either against Wickham or who will play our next game. So it'll be hopefully an opportunity to rest a couple of players, get a couple of young players in, or just to give minutes to some players who desperately need them.
And there are measures in place now in terms of fielding understrength teams, aren't there?
Yeah, like I said, you've got to have four players who have played either your last league game or your next league game. So for us, we were trying to work them out. You're probably looking at Paul Kalambaye and Terrell Thomas as being two of those. You're probably looking at a midfielder as well, or maybe even two of the three central midfielders to get involved and play in that as well. Because really, this is an opportunity to play young players. And if they dropped the rule about playing understrength teams, I'd be much more in favour of this. Because if you got rid of the B teams, you got rid of the rules about, you know, having to play four senior players, it'd be an okay trophy. Because it makes sense, because you need somewhere for getting young players or getting players who need minutes playing. So I'm not against the concept, it's just the way it's been implemented.
And in terms of the trophy itself and that introduction of those under-23s, I don't want to say anything that I shouldn't say, but your view on that and the fact that Premier League teams have come into the EFL trophy, how do you feel about that?
Well, they've brought their way in. The prize money for this competition is ridiculous. It's up there with FA Cup prize money. So for that, what it is, and you look at the gate, it's ridiculous money for what the competition is. And that's just the Premier League have bought their way into it. I don't like having B teams in it. For me, I like the group stage format. I like the way it is. And like I said, if you got rid of the requirements about understrength teams and you invited maybe conference clubs or something, National League clubs, sorry, rather than B teams, I think that's a good trophy. I think that's a good something fans can support. Because realistically, we'll have maybe 400 people there on Tuesday. And that says all you need to know about what fans think of this competition.
Mm-hmm. It is a day out at Wembley still. And actually, you mentioned the teams that have come in. As things stand, of course, none of those teams have reached the final or won the competition yet. You kind of feel like if that does happen, then it's going to really kick off.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that shouldn't be happening. And I do think that there should be definitely something to be done about this. Because you don't want Premier League clubs coming in. And if you look at it, you could have a position where you're playing Everton kids versus Man City kids at Wembley in a senior men's competition final. So that doesn't make any sense.
Okay, and a quick prediction for the game ahead, George, before we go.
I think on Tuesday we do well in this competition. I think we'll probably run out 3-1 winners.
Wonderful. This has been the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show on Love Sport Radio. We'll be back next Sunday at 8 p.m. See you then.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter. We'll be right back.